Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now. Because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And He's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
That's Dr. Martin Luther King's 94th birthday. He's still in racism and white supremacy. I want to say tonight, and every Monday night we have Dr. King Movement. Tuesday night, Cover with Ancestors. Wednesday night, Bible class. Divine Word on Thursday night. And Friday night, City Bible. Well, we're on 7 nights a week. I got Dr. David Coleman, the pastor of Mount Sinai Baptist Church, on tonight. And Dr. Coleman's church got caught on fire when we was marching in Marquette Park. Dr. King said that was the worst march it was in Marquette Park.
Yeah.
We had a meeting at Mount Pilsville Baptist Church, and we had a meeting that Dr. King had all the Team Nation there. He had the Blackstone Rangers, he had the Disciples, he had the Latin Kings, he had the Vice Lord, all of them was there. Under Dr. Martin King, and a lot of them young boys went to prison because they worked with Dr. King. And some of them still lived in prison. So much you always said, free Jeff Ford and free Larry Hoover, they were political prisoners of this system. The people that put him in jail, they dead now. They still in jail. But I'm bringing
that's
Dr.
Right.
Coleman. Dr. Coleman, I got you on. Is you on?
Yeah, I'm here. Do you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you loud and clear. I'm glad to have
yeah,
you.
I'm just glad.
Tonight is yeah. Dr. Martin Luther King's 94th birthday. And I know you played a big part in the movement in Chicago. You wasn't, did
yes,
nobody know that you opened your church up. We marched for jobs. We marched for open housing. And because of that, they burnt your church down. They didn't burn it.
That's
burned,
right.
But because of your sacrifice, a lot of men got jobs, construction jobs, where they even
right.
marched on people dead when I had like Commonwealth Evanston. People don't know the story. There's no some of it.
Nah.
But, you know, the little guys, you know, that did the work, your church was open 24/7. I was there.
That's
mama
right.
And my man, it's Jeff Ford's mother was cooking dinner for people to march to Marquette Park when Dr. King couldn't go. You know.
That's right.
It's a lot went on. And I just want to say right. tonight to everybody, stop the killing, save the babies. We got to stop killing each other. We got to deal with any of these assault weapons across this country. And whoever running for mayor, I don't care who they is, they got to talk about reparations. If they ain't talk about reparations, black folks don't need to vote for them. We got to get
right.
what happened. Now, this I want to say this before I bring you. Here's the mayor said we can't fix the school up. They got refugees and put them in the school, but you got people sleeping under the bridge tonight. You got
right.
tents. How come they open the schools up for people that live here that fought in Vietnam and Korea? That's the serious
not thing. Only, not only open it up, bitches, they fixed it up.
That's right. And they didn't...
They spent millions of dollars
people.
Getting it ready. They had contractors there working.
I'm going to ask every alderman, every commissioner to ask the mayor, what's going on that you let the refugee... Now, I want to say this here before I bring you, Dr. Coleman. I was in New Orleans when they had Katrina. The press called us refugees. And these were people that lived in New Orleans, people that lived. But here these people come, they really refugees. Come by bus. They're getting welfare. They get food stamps. And some of them got disease. And they
That's right.
In Englewood, in Woodlawn, they opened up a school for them. And there's blacks living in tents and living on the streets on benches. Something ain't right.
That's right.
And this is Dr. King's 94th birthday. We got to make a change. The black community have to come together. And our politicians got to stand up and fight. Just happened. I marched over in Marquette Park, and sister Stephanie Coleman had to go tell them take the noose down. That they had a noose up. These people just got here. Got a noose up. I'm like, we don't know what that means. They know what it means. Black folks been hurt. Mississippi and Arkansas throughout this country. It's more racial stuff going on now than ever before. But go on, Dr. Goldman. Go on and speak.
Yeah. And I've seen just on the television where white and black was getting together. This white boy had run the race down with this black girl that his granddaddy was this girl's daddy. On the what's it called, on the youth. So they hate each other. All of us, the white man, hate the black man. All of us some kin to them white folk. Because we come here black. Ain't none of us black. We mixed race of people. These them hoggers down south is some kind of relationship with us. Some of us look white. Some of us look like we white. Light skinned, brown. You know, there ain't too many black Africans is here. You don't know no about African. That every now and then you may see a black man, but rarely you see a black man. Oh, in Africa you see all black people. Here you don't see them. They're all kind of color, but they begin to hate us because we are part of them. That's why they hate us so much for what their daddy did. But we ain't gonna worry about that. We want the light. From the lighthouse to shine on me, Lord, shine on me. I wonder if the lighthouse will shine on me. It get a little dark sometimes, Bishop, but I want him to shine on me. Oh, Lord, shine on me. I just wonder if the lighthouse will shine on me. I know Jesus, he is the light of the world. Jesus, light is shining every day. I see airplanes falling out of the sky, but Jesus is letting the light shine. I see bombs falling over in the far country, killing so many people. The light is shining. Lord, I wonder what's going on. Father, speak to us, Lord. We don't know which way to go. The difference is rising every day. But I know you will make a way out of no way. Carry so many souls home to be with you. Young boy getting shot out and left in the streets. But I know you're able right now. Jesus, my Savior. From Bethlehem you came, born in a manger, all wrapped up in pulling a cloth, stayed here for 33 years. Oh, yes, but yet and still, you're still here. You let your spirit dwell. And Bishop Turner, you walk with him, Lord. Hold his hand. Guide his feet, Lord. I know you're able. to make a way out of no way. Those that listen to my weak voice, I want you to look to them, Lord. Somebody needs you, Lord. Somebody load is heavy. Somebody just lost a child, but I know you're able. Throw your arms around them. Prop them up on every leaning side. Some mother is out there on drugs. Some father is selling some kid some drugs. But I know you're able, the Lord. Touch him. Touch that young boy that messed up, Lord, selling drugs to his brothers and to his sister. They dying every day. But oh, way maker, oh, soul revival, oh, way maker, have mercy right now. Will you hear our cry, Lord, and stand by our side? For we need you. And we just can't get along without you. Mountain is so high. Valley is so deep. But I know you're able to bring down the mountain. I know you're able to heap up the valley. Please, sir, have mercy. Now, Lord, when I said my last prayer, when I said my last word, please, sir, have mercy. I'm going to turn you back over in the hand of the bishop right now. Shine.
God bless you.
Oh, me. Go ahead, bishop.
Shine.
Yes, Lord. Yes, sir.
For that. This is the celebration of Martin Luther King, Jr., who was the conscience of the nation. And tonight I got people from Mississippi, Arkansas, Louisiana. I got from St. Paul, Minnesota home. And I'm going to go to Louisiana. I'm going up to St. Paul, Minnesota. Sister Sherry, I know she has something to say. Tell me what you think Dr. King will be doing now. I'm going up to St. Paul, Minnesota right now. Sister Sherry, here's a word. Sister Sherry, your line is open now. You can tell us what you think about Dr. King.
I think Dr. King was a great man, a great leader of all people. And we should all respect him. It doesn't matter what color we are. And he
That's
would
right.
be very sad for what he sees going on down here. He would be very, very sad because I think we're in worse shape than when he was walking among us.
No, go ahead. Get you some. I don't drink it now. Yes.
That's good.
No, I'm finished off.
I want to say to you, Sister Sherry, thank you for that information. People need to know Dr. King came to liberate black and white. He was trying to bring white into the truth and bring black out of the darkness that we were in. And some of the things he said is true today. I want to go to Detroit. I'm going to see who I got in Detroit. Somebody in Detroit. Oh, I got...
Go ahead, sir.
This young lady in Detroit, 8138 in Detroit. Tell me what you think about Dr. King and what you think he'd be doing now. You're on the air, 8138.
I think he would stop the violence, and I think he would stop the guns from being out here in the street, though. And I think that he would be real powerful to everybody. He would get a word to everybody that's in the United States. He tried to keep people from the segregation going on and race them, all that stuff, Bishop. I think he would be a great man right now.
Thank you for that. That's out of Detroit. And I want to tell you tonight, as we go across the country, I said, let me sit here. I want to tell you, I see somebody from Pontiac, Michigan. I see somebody from New York. One lady from California. I want to pray for those in California having floods and storms. God is able to carry you out of it and you're going to be all right. I just want to say to you, I want to go to 1794. I want to see what you have to say about what's going on. You're on the line now.
Thank you, Bishop. I think if Dr. King was living today, he would still be doing the marches with the black-on-black crime, the drugs, these kids, trying to preach to them, stop the killing. Stop killing each other. Be a better person, be a better generation.
I want to thank you for that all the way from Pontiac, Michigan. And I want to say to you, I'm going to 3244 right here in Chicago, this ministry here. What you have to say, 3244, what you think if what Dr. King was living, issues he would be? I got 3244. What issue Dr. King would be on if he was living today? Mm-hmm. Let me go on a little bit further. I just want to say to you tonight, Dr. King have opened up doors for all of us to go to be a better man, a better woman. And I want to say that to you. I remember when Dr. King came to Chicago. I want to say this to you. You may not know. Dr. King came to Chicago. He was on the west side on the Pender. And the Mayor Daley, and they said that they don't want nobody. They even told the police not to guard Dr. King. But this is what happened when they got started. Dr. King, the brother, the teammates, the vice lord, the Blackstone Rangers, and also the disciples, they and the Cobblestone, they all guarded Dr. King. They all was around the house. The police, what y'all doing? There? We guarding Dr. King. Because we done heard through the grapevine that Daley said he don't want no Chicago police to watch over him. But the brothers got together and watched over Dr. King all the time we was him. And what happened? When we marched to Marquette Park, throwing bricks and niggas go home, we at home. This kind of stuff that was going on. And this kind of evil have rose up now. It's still going on in America. So it's important to understand that the economic thing, that what's going on now, it looks like it's going back. You got people sleeping under the bridge, and the people sleeping under the bridge can't get no people in the tent. And other people come here and they get everything. It's the same kind of thing. But it's got to be some changes going on in America. And I'm going to play a little bit of Dr. King. Some of the stuff he said, he was at Mount Pilsen Baptist Church. And he did this. He was at Mount Pilsen Baptist Church when he did this, when he talked about what was going on in America. And Dr. King was there at Mount Pilsen Church. And as he was there, he was telling us about what was happening in our community and what was going on.
That's right.
And that's what he was saying. And I want to play a little of that because it tells you that what Dr. King said. Now, I'm going to give you that. He was at Mount Pilsen Baptist Church. Reverend Blair was there. Reverend John Thurston was there. All Dr. Coleman was there. Jesse Jackson was there. I was there. All the ministers that was there and all the gang leaders was there.
That's right.
Because they were supporting Dr. King. And Dr. King had a meeting. And out of this meeting we had at Mount Pilsen Baptist Church came the Poor People Campaign. And we were doing open house and marching. I want the people to know the truth. Everybody want to have a dinner with Dr. King. We have a banquet. It ain't about no banquet, no breakfast. It's about getting out there, changing the killing of our babies
right.
And our children. It's about the
now
talk
you talking.
It's going. Look, the Republican and Democrat got to come together. They let me tell you this, him. The Democrat and Republican, they pass money. $1 trillion to go to Ukraine, they can't pay $10 for Mississippi, Arkansas, and Louisiana, where people are losing their homes. People are out.
That's right. Just,
they spend $1 trillion.
Tornado just went through there and kids tore up everything.
They're spending money somewhere else. They're spending taxpayers' money. And they
ain't, they ain't never sent a nigga. They ain't never sent us a dime.
That's right.
They ain't never did nothing for us. We them people down there done paid taxes, man.
the people that's sleeping under the bridge, they fought in Vietnam, Korea, Casey, a dentist, or a doctor. You got
that's
people
right.
homeless in Chicago, and the administration opened up a school. When they told the black, we can't open the school up, we ain't got enough money to fix. Now they're fixing the school up to put refugees. And I ain't got no problem with them, but they ain't paying no tax. They take our tax money, our money we work for, give it to people that's going to be racist against us when they get on their feet.
That's right. Why don't they do it for us? You got plenty more schools that open. There ain't nobody got no business sleeping outside.
Now,
they got
Dr.
plenty
King.
Of room for them.
I submit to you tonight that a Congress that proves to be more anti-Negro than anti-rat needs to be dismissed. That our legislative assemblies have adopted Nero as their patron saint and are bent on fiddling while our cities burn. Even when the people persist and in the face of great obstacles develop indigenous leadership and self-help approaches to their problems, and finally tread the forest to obtain existing government funds, the corrupt political order seeks to crush even this beginning of hope. The case of CDGM in Mississippi is the most publicized example, but it is a story repeated many times across our nation. Our own experience here in Chicago is especially painfully present. After an enthusiastic approval by HEW's Department of Adult Education, SCLC began an adult literacy project to aid 1,000 young men and women who have been pushed out of overcrowded ghetto schools in obtaining basically literacy skills prerequisite to receiving jobs. We had an agreement with A&P Stores for 750 jobs through SCLC's job program, Operation Breadbasket, and had recruited over 500 pupils the first week. At that point, Congressman Kuchinski and the Daily Machine intervened and demanded that Washington cut off our funds or channel them through the machine-controlled poverty program in Chicago. Now we have no problem with administrative supervision, but we do have a desire to be independent of machine control and the Democratic Party patronage network. For this desire for a politically independent approach to the needs of our brothers, our funds are being stopped as of September 15th, and a very meaningful program discontinued. Yes, the hour is dark. Evil comes forth in the guise of good. It is a time of double talk when men in high places have a high blood pressure of deceptive rhetoric and an anemia of concrete performance. We crowd against welfare handouts to the poor, but generously approve an oil depletion allowance to make the rich richer. Six Mississippi plantations receive more than $1 million a year not to plant cotton, but no provision is made to feed the tenant farmer who is put out of work by the government subsidy. crowning achievement in hypocrisy must go to those staunch Republicans and Democrats of the Midwest and West who were given land by our government when they came here as immigrants from Europe. They were given education through the land-grant colleges. They were provided with agricultural agents to keep them abreast of farming trends. They were granted low-interest loans to aid in the mechanization of their farm. And now that they have succeeded in becoming successful, they are paid not to farm. These are the same people who now say to black people whose ancestors were brought to this country in chains and who were emancipated in 1863 without being given land to cultivate or bread to eat, that they must pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. What they truly advocate is socialism for the rich and capitalism for the poor. I wish that I could say that this is just a passing phase in the cycle of our nation's life. Certainly times of war, times of reactions throughout the society. But I suspect that we are now experiencing the coming to the surface of a triple-pronged sickness that has been lurking within our body politic from it, that is the sickness of racism, excessive materialism, and militarism. Not only is this our nation's dilemma, it is the plague of Western civilization. As early as 1906, W.E.B. Du Bois prophesied that the problem of the 20th century will be the problem of the color line. Now, as we stand two-thirds into this crucial period of history, we know full well that racism is still that hound of hell which dogs the tracks of our civilization. Ever since the birth of our nation, white America has had a schizophrenic personality on the question of race. She has been torn between selves, a self in which she proudly professed the great principles of democracy and a self in which she madly practiced the antithesis of democracy. This tragic duality has produced a strange indecisiveness and ambivalence toward the Negro, causing America to take a step backward simultaneously with every step forward on the question of racial justice. To be at once attracted to the Negro and repelled by him, to love and to hate him. There has never been a solid, unified and determined thrust to make justice a reality for Afro-Americans. The step backward has a new name today. It is called the white backlash. But the white backlash is nothing new. It is the surfacing of old prejudices, hostilities, and ambivalences that have always been there. It was caused neither by the cry of black power, nor by the unfortunate recent wave of riots in our cities. The white backlash of today is rooted in the same problem that has characterized America ever since the black man landed in chains on the shores of this nation. This does not imply that all white Americans are racist. Far from it, many white people have, through a deep moral compulsion, fought long and hard for racial justice. nor does it mean that America has made no progress in her attempt to cure the body politics of racism, or that the dogma of racism has not been considerably modified in recent years. However, for the good of America, it is necessary to refute the idea that the dominant ideology in our country, even today, is freedom and equality, while racism is just an occasional departure from the norm on the part of a few bigoted extremists. Racism can well be that corrosive evil that will bring down the curtain on Western civilization. Arnold Toynbee has said that some 26 civilizations have risen upon the face of the earth. Almost all of them have descended into the junk heaps of destruction. The decline and fall of these civilizations, according to Toynbee, not caused by external invasion, but by internal decay. They failed to respond creatively to the challenges impinging upon them. If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men. The second aspect of our afflicted society is extreme materialism. An Asian writer has portrayed our dilemma in candid terms. He says, you call your 1,000 material devices labor-saving machinery, yet you are forever busy. With the multiplying of your old machinery, you grow increasingly fatigued, anxious, nervous, dissatisfied. Whatever you have, you want more. Wherever you are, you want to go somewhere else. Your devices are neither time-saving nor soul-saving machinery. There are so many sharp spurs which urge you on to invent more machinery and to do more business. This tells us something about our civilization that cannot be cast aside as a prejudice charge by an Eastern thinker who is jealous of Western prosperity. We cannot escape the indictment. This does not mean that we must turn back the clock of scientific progress. No one can overlook the wonders that science has wrought for our lives. The automobile will not abdicate in favor of the horse and buggy, of the train in favor of the stagecoach, of the tractor in favor of the hand plow, of the scientific method in favor of ignorance and superstition. But our moral lag must be redeemed. Scientific power outruns moral power. We end up with guided missiles and misguided men. When we foolishly maximize the minimum and minimize the maximum, we sign the warrant for our own day of doom. It is this moral lag in our thing-oriented society that blinds us to the human realities around us, encourages us in the greed and exploitation, which creates the sector of poverty in the midst of wealth. Again, we have deluded ourselves into believing the myth that capitalism grew and prospered out of the Protestant ethic of hard work and sacrifice. The fact is that capitalism was built on the exploitation and suffering of black slaves. And continues to thrive on the exploitation of the poor, both black and white, both here and abroad. poor whites do not participate in the free flow of wealth within our economy, they will forever be poor, giving thy energy, thy talents, and thy limited funds to the consumer market, but reaping few benefits and services in return. The way to end poverty is to end the exploitation of the poor, ensure them a fair share of the government services and the nation's resources. I proposed recently that a national agency be established to provide employment for everyone needing it. Nothing is more socially inexcusable than unemployment in this age. In the 30s, when the nation was bankrupt, it instituted such an agency, the WPA. In the present conditions of a nation glutted with resources, it is barbarous to condemn people desiring work to soul-sapping inactivity and poverty. I am convinced that even this one massive act of concern would do more than all the state police and armies of the nation to quell riots and steal hatred. The tragedy is that our materialistic culture does not possess the statesmanship necessary to do it. Victor Hugo could have been thinking of 20th century America when he wrote, "There's always more misery among the lower classes than there is humanity in the higher classes." The time has come for America to face the inevitable choice between materialism and humanism. We must devote at least as much to our children's education and the health of the poor as we do to the care of our automobiles and the building of beautiful, impressive hotels. We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power. We must further recognize that the ghetto is a domestic colony. Black people must develop programs that will aid in the transfer of power and wealth into the hands of residents of the ghetto so that they may in reality control their own destiny. This is the meaning of new politics. People of goodwill in the larger community must support the black man in this effort. The final phase of our national sickness is the disease of militarism. Nothing more clearly demonstrates our nation's abuse of military power than our tragic adventure in Vietnam. This war has played havoc with the destiny of the entire world. It's torn up the Geneva Agreement, conspiracy impaired the United Nations, it has exacerbated the hatred between continents, and worse still, between races. It has frustrated our development of home at home, telling our own underprivileged citizens that we place insatiable military demands above our most critical needs, has greatly contributed to the forces of reaction in America and strengthened the military-industrial complex. And it has practically destroyed Vietnam and left thousands of American and Vietnamese youth maimed and mutilated and exposed the whole world to the risk of nuclear warfare. Above all, The war in Vietnam has revealed what Senator Fulbright calls our nation's arrogance of power. We are arrogant in professing to be concerned about the freedom of foreign nations while not setting our own house in order. Many of our senators and congressmen vote joyously to appropriate billions of dollars for the war in Vietnam. And many of these same senators and congressmen vote loudly against the fair housing bill to make it possible for a Negro veteran of Vietnam to purchase a decent home. We arm Negro soldiers to kill on foreign battlefields, but offer little protection for their relatives from beatings and killing in our own South. We are willing to make the Negro 100% of a citizen in warfare, but reduce him to 50% of a citizen on American soil. No war in our nation's history has ever been so violative of our conscience, our national interests, and so destructive of our moral standing before the world. No enemy has ever been able to cause such damage to us as we inflict upon ourselves. The inexorable decay of our urban centers has flared into terrifying domestic conflict as the pursuit of foreign war absorbs our wealth and energy. While in poverty scar our cities, as our military might destroys cities in a far-off land to support oligarchy to intervene in domestic conflict. The president who cherishes consensus for peace has intensified the war. In answer to a cry to stop the war, it has brought tauntingly to 1 minute flying time from China to a moment before the midnight of world conflagration. We are offered a tax for war instead of a plan for peace. Men of reason should no longer debate the merits of war or means of financing war. They should end the war and restore sanity and humanity to American policy. If the will of the people continues to be unheeded, all men of goodwill must create a situation in which the 1967-68 elections are made a referendum on the war. The American people must have an opportunity to vote into oblivion those who cannot detach themselves from militarism, So we are here because we believe, we hope, we pray that something new might emerge in the political life of this nation, which will produce a new man, new structures and institutions, and the new life for mankind. I am convinced that this new life will not emerge until our nation undergoes a radical revolution of values. When machines and computers, profit motives and property rights are considered more important than people, the giant triplets of racism, economic exploitation and militarism are incapable of being conquered. A civilization can flounder as readily in the face of moral bankruptcy as it can through financial bankruptcy. A true revolution of values will soon cause us to question the fairness and justice of many of our past and present policies. We are called to play the Good Samaritans on life's roadside, but that will only be an initial act. One day the whole Jericho road must be bombed so that men and women will not be beaten and robbed as they make that journey through life. True compassion is more than flinging a coin to a beggar. It understands that an edifice which produces beggars needs restructuring. A true revolution of values will soon look uneasily on the glaring contrast of poverty and wealth. With righteous indignation, it will look at thousands of working people displaced from their jobs with reduced income as a result of automation, while the profits of the employers remain intact, and say, this is not just. It will look across the oceans and see individual capitalists of the West investing huge sums of money in Asia and Africa only to take the profits out with no concern for the social betterment of the countries and say, this is not just. It will look at our alliance with the landed gentry of Latin America and say, this is not just. True revolution of values will lay hands on the world order and say of war, this way of settling differences is not just. This business of burning human beings with napalm, of filling our nation's homes with orphans and widows, of injecting poisonous drugs of hate into the veins of peoples normally humane, of sending men home from dark and bloody battlefields physically handicapped and psychologically deranged, cannot be reconciled with wisdom, justice, and love. A nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death. So what we must all see is that these are revolutionary times. All over the globe, men are revolting against old systems of exploitation. And out of the wounds of a frail world, new systems and of justice and equality are being born. The shirtless and barefoot people of earth are rising up as never before. The people who sat in darkness have seen a great light. We in the West support these revolutions. It is a sad fact that because of comfort, complacency, a morbid fear of communism, and our proneness to adjust to injustice, the Western nations that initiated so much of the revolutionary spirit of the modern world have now become the arch anti-revolutionaries. This has driven many to feel that only Marxism has the revolutionary spirit. Communism is a judgment. In a sense, communism is a judgment of our failure to make democracy real and to follow through on the revolution that we initiated. Our only hope today lies in our ability to recapture the revolutionary spirit. Go out into a sometimes hostile world, declaring eternal opposition to poverty, racism, and militarism. With this powerful commitment, we shall boldly challenge the status quo, an unjust morass, and thereby speed the day when every valley shall be exalted, and every mountain and hill shall be made low, the crooked places shall be made straight, and the rough places plain. May I say in conclusion, that there is a need now more than ever before for men and women in our nation to be creatively maladjusted. Mr. Davis said, and I say to you that I choose to be among the maladjusted, as my good friend Bill Coffin said, there are those who have criticized me and many of you for taking a stand against the war in Vietnam and for seeking to say to the nation that the issues of civil rights cannot be separated from the issues of peace. I want to say to you tonight that I intend to keep these issues mixed because they are mixed. Somewhere we must see that justice is indivisible. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And I have fought now too long and too hard against segregated public accommodations to end up at this point in my life segregating my moral concern. So let us stand in this convention knowing that on some positions, power is asked the question, is it safe? Expediency asks the question, is it politic? Vanity asks the question, is it popular? But conscience asks the question, is it right? And on some positions, it is necessary for the moral individual to take a stand that is neither faith, nor politics, nor do it because it is right.
Open eyes that we may see tomorrow.
compassion and please heal.